Welcome to the Bitches Be Brave podcast. We know how difficult and crazy it can be to juggle family, career, and not to mention make time for yourself as a busy working mom.
So it's time to get inspired and gain the tools to create a life you love. We are your hosts, Bev Steele
and Heather Hobbs.
Join us as together we motivate, inspire, and gain tools to thrive in all areas of life. Let's go.
Welcome back to this episode of Bitches Be Brave. And today we are interviewing Michelle Moore. And man, talk about an amazing woman who is brave and strong and courageous and just absolutely, I just think an angel for so many other women out there. I love her story.
Yeah, I'm going to go on. Grounded, real. Mm-hmm. I definitely am so in awe of her realness. And I think I need to take a few pages from her book. I can't wait to read her book, by the way, mm-hmm. but just as far as letting go. And I know you and Heather and I just really struggle with trying to control, and you just feel like you don't even think that you're trying to control things. You're just trying to make things happen and have goals, but sometimes you just got to let go.
Yeah. And I think that's when you look at her story and, you know, she over and over had just talked about the lesson of letting go and how things happen, right? When you let things go and you stop worrying about them or trying to make them go a certain way, that's when things happen. And I think, you know, that's such a philosophy that is true about whether it is, you know, manifesting or your intentions or, you know, if you meditate or if you pray or whatever it is that you believe in. That is the common theme, right, that we talk about, but it's one of the hardest things to do. I know I am. I want to control everything.
Right. And letting go allows you to take a moment to look for the signs, to listen to that voice, you know, to help guide you, where I think that when you're just going, trying to control, you just keep pushing that away.
Well, the one thing I love about Michelle's story is that she so easily could have let herself be victim. She could have fallen into just the poor me story. Why me? Poor me. This is my life. But instead, what she has done is she's taken every single thing that has happened to her and looked at it by saying, this happened to me because so that I can now turn around and be so much to so many other people who need me. And that has like filled her with so much happiness and joy and gratitude. And I love that because so many times we could do that. We can look at any situation and be like, poor me, look what happened to me. This is why I can't do, you know, X, Y, and Z. But when you turn that around and say, because of this is why I can go forward and do more.
Yeah. And it's such a good message about everything you are and where you are today is where you're supposed to be for what's next, everything you are. And she started volunteering and helping before she got cancer. Her son had diabetes, you know, all of that. She was the one that needed help. So I don't want to ruin the podcast because we're going to, you know, there's so many good comments and lessons in this podcast. And I hope that you all enjoyed as much as Heather and I did.
Hey guys, we're just taking a quick break to tell you about an amazing new wine that we just discovered. You guys know that nobody loves a glass of wine more than we do, but when we learned what is actually in the wine that we were drinking, we were shocked. No wonder we were getting headaches, brain fog, and having trouble sleeping.
That's right, Heather, but then we discovered dry farm wines. Dry farm wines are organically crafted, unprocessed wine free of sugar, additives, and lower in alcohol. These wines are amazing, and they're better for our bodies and our planet. Now we can enjoy the pleasure and euphoria of wine without the negative effects of higher alcohol consumption.
To find out where you can try these amazing wines and get a special Bitches Be Brave discount, click on the link in our show notes below. Welcome. We are here today with Michelle Moore, who oversees the COVID-19 Testing Response Center as a Senior Vice President for LabCorp. By night, she's also the founder of Mother's Grace, a nonprofit organization that has raised more than $5 million for families in acute crisis, assisting more than 6,000 mothers in the state of Arizona and throughout the world. In her upcoming book, Mother's Grace, Healing the World, One Woman at a Time, which will be out next Tuesday, Michelle shares how her adversity became a global movement when she survived an aggressive form of breast cancer at the same time that her son faced a near-fatal complications from juvenile diabetes. Grateful to be alive, she was compelled to make changes in her life and the lives of others. Michelle, welcome to our podcast. We're so excited to have you here today.
Thanks, Heather and Bev. I appreciate it.
Wow. I can't believe your story, and I really want to kind of dive into it. So I guess we'll start off with, you know, you've been working at LabCorp, you're a senior VP. How did you come to then venture off into the nonprofit organization and your book? And, you know, tell us your story.
Okay. So when I was 5, my mom passed away from a congenital heart defect. And it was a shock, and it was really hard on our family. And losing your mom at 5 was a tough thing throughout my life, throughout the years. And I think I was always looking for a way to connect with other mothers. You know, my mom was a strong presence in my life. And so it was always in the back of my mind. And so when I got out of college and I went right to work for LabCorp, and I was in, you know, serious business development, just, you know, left brain, out there selling, doing all that kind of thing. And I think there was just always a little piece of me in the back of my mind that wanted to do more and connect with mothers more and families. So I started doing those things with LabCorp. You know, anytime there was an opportunity to do a philanthropic activity, I did that. And it all really started for me when Hurricane Katrina took place. And my young sons, I had 3 young sons at the time, were watching it unfold on TV. And you know, I'd never been this person that like picked up the phone and said, I want to go somewhere and clean up a natural disaster. But for some reason, it compelled me. And my son, that was my oldest, that was 4th grade at the time, we got a ticket and went down there and joined a group called St. Paul's Homecoming and started cleaning up neighborhoods. And we bonded with a mother there named Connie Udo, who's actually the first chapter in the book. And We went back several times to help clean up. It made a huge impression on my son. And we just kept having experiences like that. They unfolded very divinely. And I would meet moms and I would do these things, but I wanted more. Then in 2008, out of the blue, I was diagnosed with a very aggressive breast cancer. Came out of the blue, and within 3 weeks, the night before I was going into my first chemo appointment, the very night before, my 7-year-old, my middle son, was acting strangely. And because I work in healthcare, I took him to the pediatrician thinking I wouldn't have time once I started chemo. And within 5 minutes, they tested him and he was rushed to Phoenix Children's Hospital and nearly died from ketoacidosis. And he spent the next week to 10 days in the hospital learning how to be insulin dependent. I couldn't come visit him because my white counts were so low from chemo. So it was just this. We went from wanting to do this very involved, getting to know mothers, doing some philanthropic stuff, to being that story ourselves. So it kind of came up full circle. And that's how Mother's Grace was born. I saw what it felt like to go through these things that I had seen other women go through. And now I knew what it meant. And I wanted someone to come in and just take it all away. You know, you don't have a choice. You have to deal with it, right? So we started Mother's Grace in 2009. And we started it with $2,000 from a garage sale that we had. And it just grew exponentially, grassroots, through the years. And women just loved it because it was about mothers and mothers that were otherwise strong, contributing members to the community. But they just got thrown off their game, like Connie did in Hurricane Katrina, or like I did from cancer and diabetes. And it just became a movement here in Arizona. And then it grew. And you know, 12 years later, we're a $1 million charity, and it's all volunteer. We're all professionals otherwise. We have doctors, attorneys, businesswomen. First Lady of Arizona is on our board. It's grown because of the camaraderie and the mission. I know that's a long answer.
No, that was great. I have to say, I feel like you're our soul sister, just very much so. That, you know, Heather and I, when we started this podcast, it was really kind of that yearning that we really wanted to connect with other women, other moms, you know, do more. Yeah. And it's interesting to me that your story starts in a way that you're just, you know, I don't know how you found yourself there. You just decided to go, and then full circle, your story became the story. So can you Tell us a little bit about how that impacted you. And, you know, do you feel like that was a message from a higher power or?
Absolutely. I when you said that, it just brings tears to my eyes because that's exactly how it happened to me. You know, you go through your life without your mom. And so you have this subconscious, you know, situation where you're looking for that. And then you start connecting because I think subconsciously you're pushing yourself for that, right? And then it happens to me because I'm wanting to help people, but I think I was helping from the top down, right? It's like, here, I'll come help you. When it happens to you, you support from the bottom up. It's like, okay, I've been in that situation. I know what it feels like. And yes, so when I had my second child, the one that had diabetes, when he was born, I went to the spa for a day because I hadn't slept in 2 days. It was a C-section. And I had a dream while I was getting a massage that I should write this book. And I was like, I'm not a writer. I'm a businesswoman. I've never written anything in my life. And I had a dream 20 years ago, and I just started working on it. And this all came into fruition. These mothers I've met in the book, from Connie in New Orleans to Lori Abahaf, who lost her child in the Parkland shootings, to a nun in India who I went over and met. It's just happened so divinely. And you know, when things happen divinely, you're not pushing. They happen to you.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
They just come to be. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. And I'd love to know, I mean, so going back to your story, so here you are, you're diagnosed with a very aggressive form of breast cancer all at the same time that your son is, you know, fighting for his life with type 1 diabetes. So what was the strength and how did these women, other women, other mothers in your life help feed you the strength that you needed to get through that time? And you know, I assume, how are things now with your health and, you know, and just kind of seeing it all the way through?
So, yep, I'm an almost 13-year survivor now of breast cancer. Awesome. So I have a clean bill of health. My son that was 7 that was diagnosed is a sophomore at University of Arizona. So Bev, who was in Tucson, is familiar with that. Yep. So he's doing great. He's actually the social chair of his fraternity. So he's actually the kid that probably shouldn't have diabetes, but he does. Yeah, I mean, it's just been a long journey. And I'm sorry, I kind of went off a tangent a little bit, Heather, but point me back to your question.
Just how other women gave you the strength during that time of, you know, how did they help feed you and support you?
Yeah, so I think when you go out and do these philanthropic missions, so when I went to New Orleans, I didn't have any agenda except to go and feel something and to help. And you meet people like people, right? So I met this woman who had just been through losing her house, losing a member of her family. And you just connect on a different level versus, you know, sitting in a Scottsdale Starbucks, right? You connect on a different level. And so hearing their story and seeing all the real emotions, from grief to depression to severe anxiety. I mean, what woman do we know that we have spoken to that's gone somebody that hasn't had severe anxiety and tried to address it? And so you really connect on a different level than you do at my yoga class, right? So, and then it just gets deeper and deeper, and you kind of put aside the BS, right? You put aside the BS with people and you just connect on that level. And so when you have that, you can talk about anything, and that strength comes from that kind of connection. To me, I mean, the people I have in my life, the women I have in my life, I just got over COVID. I had COVID for 12 days, and everybody that helped me was a dear friend. It was a woman that, you know, they didn't want to know all the details about COVID. All they wanted to do is drop some fresh fruit at my house or, you know, make sure my kids were okay. It's a deeper connection. I know I sounded that again, that I'm just passionate about that. I feel like if we can get past that with women, there's a lot there to support each other.
Yeah. I think it's being real, right? And not having that front of, I mean, sometimes we want to compare and compete and make ourselves seem like we have it all put together, but it's that authenticity of saying this is it. And I love what you're doing because I think especially in times of acute stress or anxiety or, you know, any of those emotions. I know we just had an episode, we were recording last week where we were talking to a mom of a child who had a mental illness. And she was like, she said, you know, prior to this diagnosis, she used to look around and go, I don't know how other mothers can handle like certain stress. Like you'd see somebody with a child in a wheelchair, or I know my own mom, I had a sister with leukemia, and I remember calling her when I had first had my son and I'm holding my newborn in my arms. And I called her and said, how did you do it, mom? Like, how did you handle and survive having a child who had leukemia? Because, and she's like, you just do, you know, and as a mom, you do, and you have to rely on other people. So thank you for sharing that.
So Michelle, I have to ask you, because Heather and I have both been in business for well over 20 years, leadership, and I know that you are in that role. Did you find it difficult to receive help? I mean, I think that it's been a constant kind of theme with the guests that we've had on this podcast is really, you know, as women, we tend to think that we have to do it all, and, you know, asking for help may be a sign that we don't have it together. So was it hard to actually receive, you had been helping, and then to all of a sudden be in a position where you were requiring help, was that hard?
In the beginning, yes. I think you guys pointed out a few minutes ago that, you know, we try to appear like we have it all together and the women are the backbone of the family. And I was very much like that, type A. I'm going to do this by the time I'm 40. I'm this by the time I'm 45. And then cancer kind of levels that. It really does. I mean, I changed exponentially after that diagnosis. I learned the lesson of letting go. Just letting go of everything, because the best things in my life that have happened to me are not from pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and trying to control the outcome. It's when I've put myself, you know, put an intention out there or prayed about it and then absolutely let go and let grace come in. So I just feel like, no, at this point, I have a really good sense of how to let go.
I think that is so important for our listeners to hear right now. I mean, at this time when your kids may be online for school and work is crazy, or, you know, everything is just, you know, the need to want to control things are there, right? How are you going to control
the
environment now? Because we can't control what's happening with COVID and all of that, but the ability to let go can actually get you to where you want to be, which is crazy. Mm-hmm.
It's the lesson that is so contradictory, right? It really is. But an example of that would be this COVID situation. So I work in COVID. I talk about it 24/7. I was trying my best to protect my middle son, who's a juvenile diabetic, to not get COVID. He came home from school and we, you know, layered up in the house, ordered our groceries online. And then, you know, the state reopened as it probably should have. And he went out with his friends, got COVID, and then I got it from him, and I was much more sick than he was. And I remember laying in bed going, you know, there was nothing I could really do here, right? I mean, I have the worst fear that I had was having COVID. So now I'm just going to lay here and be really, really sick. And, you know, there's nothing to do. Now I have to let go and let whatever happens, happens. You know, you can take good care of yourself, right? But it was a really good lesson for me. It was just, there was nothing I could do in that situation.
Well, and maybe too, being in the industry that you're in, it's like, okay, you now have that extra layer of compassion for all of the testing and the diagnosing that you're doing out there as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
I want to go back and ask you, because, you know, you have a very crazy, stressful, important day job that you do. And kind of going back in where you talk about that, you know, just things started to divinely unfold and how you were moved into what is ultimately your passion and you feel like your purpose. And I think so many times we talk about finding that passion, finding that purpose in your life. But I feel like a lot of times people look at it as an either or, right? So you leave your corporate job and you go to this passion and purpose. So I'd love for you to talk about, you know, for you, you've maintained both and you're running this extremely, you know, amazing nonprofit organization that is huge, but you're also, you know, still in a very senior executive level at your company. So how have you decided, I guess, to maintain both of those parts of your life?
I think that's an excellent question. And it's more, again, about letting go, because you could run around and be crazy. I traveled every week. I was coming to San Diego, where you're at, and then trying to answer applications for Mother's Grace. But it's, again, letting go. In Mother's Grace, we have 12 amazing board members, and they are rock star women. So it was letting go of not trying to control the outcome of Mother's Grace and let the people come in and do their job. It's, we think of it as a jigsaw puzzle, and each of us has a special space in that. I don't need to oversee everything if you get the right people. It's the same at work. And so it's a lesson between, I think, ages 40 and 50 for me, that you absolutely have to let go of trying to do it all. And you can't have exactly the way you thought it was going to be. It's much better when you let go and it becomes what it is. And for me, I bring it, both of those, into the different arenas. So at LabCorp, we've helped a lot of people with Mother's Grace, and a lot of my colleagues have supported Mother's Grace, and vice versa. At Mother's Grace, you know, I'm able to bring my expertise around diagnostics to people, and I do a really good job of vetting applications of mothers that come in that are ill. So you can combine them. It doesn't have to be either or. It can be who you are as a person, you know, and your kind of MO, and just bring it to both. It's just, it's your life. It's not professional and then workout and then kids. You can bring them all together. And that's what I do with my kids too. Like, if I was really busy working, I just brought them with me. So, you know, that's how I think it's the best way to do it. And I think the women in the book that I wrote about do that well too.
I think that that's so great to hear though, because I think that women, we struggle. I mean, you feel like you have to compartmentalize so many things. So the fact that you just said, you know, hey, I wanted to be with my kids, but I had work. And I think it teaches your kids too, that piece of work ethic. And that mom is not just mom. Mom is all these other titles as well.
Well, and I think because I've brought them into these things, they have even a larger form of respect for me. I'm just really frank. Like, you know, like today I was like, I shut the door on online school. It's like, listen, I've got a podcast I got to do, so turn it down. It's just frank, you know, being really real.
Me too.
Yeah. So, and letting them understand what you're doing too, instead of, like you said, compartmentalizing.
So do you think that, you said that your oldest son went with you the first time that you volunteered and he has a passion for that. Do all of your kids share in that, or is there kind of a different reception?
I think they're all a little different. I've taken them all different places. After the New Orleans, we went several times. Then I took them all to Africa to work in an orphanage, and we all climbed Kilimanjaro together. So I tried to make things, you know, philanthropic, but also in an activity, but also like something we're going to go all do together. That's a memory, like Kilimanjaro. Mm-hmm. And so I think they have a sense of wanting to do adventure. They love adventure travel. Mm-hmm. And they have big hearts. And yeah, I would say my oldest definitely has a very compassionate heart and wants to do the right thing for people. We'll see about the other two. Right now they're really busy having time. They're supposed to do it at 19, right?
If only they let us run their lives. That's what I always say. Just if only you let me make all your decisions for you. Exactly. Life would be good.
It would go really, really well. It would go really, really well.
So how is, you know, going back to your first story of losing your mom at such a young age, I mean, when you look and reflect, I mean, I just think now too, like what you're doing and filling that void with so many other mothers and what they go through. And so is it something that, I guess sometimes there's women that could live in fear, right? Fear of what could happen, fear of, I don't want to leave my children without me, or look at all these bad things that have happened. And so I guess, how do you kind of manage those thoughts and process in your mind?
One of the best questions I've ever been asked. And there's a lot of that in my book, because when you are 5 years old and I was alone with my mom and I watched her die, shockingly, and my dad was out of town. And I wrote all the details of that in the book. And then after that, your relatives constantly fill your head with, you're just like your mom. You're just like your mom. And your five-year-old self says, well, I'm going to die when I'm 27 then. Mm-hmm. So that's what you start thinking. And I manifested severe anxiety, really bad anxiety. I had my first panic attack at 9 years old. And it went through, I talk about that as well, what that looked like in high school and college. Finally, I was so uncomfortable with it in college that I sought out a behavior therapist, because back then, you know, parents didn't know what to do with that. So I sought out a really great behavior therapist that talked about panic attacks. And I went through a 2-year process with her about facing fear instead of, you know, and trust me, I think pharmaceuticals are awesome for certain people, but for me, I felt like I needed a behavior change. So it was really teaching myself to feel the fear instead of clenching against it and going through the process. And I taught myself that at 23 and really outgrew panic attacks. And that's not to say I don't get anxiety sometimes, especially when I was going through cancer, but the combination of that behavior change and going through cancer and realizing, well, that the worst just happened, you know, mm-hmm. and you didn't die. So I think that and being extremely faith-filled that the right thing is going to happen, because I've had a lot happen in my life and it usually turns out okay. Mm-hmm. So that those three things.
Wow. So at such a young age to have the wherewithal to say, I need behavioral change instead of turning to drugs or alcohol or having a doctor prescribe something. How did you have that at such a young age? Or was there someone that was guiding you?
You know, I think that's another great question. My kindergarten report card said bossy, leader, you know, all these different, you know, female, alpha female things. I think I just always wanted something good. And I think my mother, even though she died when I was 5, set this precedent of true spirituality. She was an RN. And even with a heart condition, she was out pushing it for other patients and helping other people and not complaining about her condition. She had a doctor lie about her physical so that she could get into nursing school. So I saw that, and I saw two powerful grandmothers that, they pulled out their bootstraps. So I think that was put into my mind at a young age. And I just always wanted more. I didn't want, I just wanted more. I wanted to feel healthy. I wanted to feel whole. And, I just kept looking. I think if you keep looking and you have faith, you'll find it.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I think, it's just, to me, it just gives me chills to think like how all these things kind of have led to you now providing this love and this support and this place for so many other women. I know that you've said, over 6,000 mothers in the state of Arizona and throughout the world. And so what has been your main mechanism of, getting the name and what you do out there? How do people find you?
So we grew exponentially in Arizona through word of mouth, but now all the hospitals, we're pretty well known. A lot of the media writes about us a lot. We get lots of grants. The hospitals know about us. The hospice cares know, so they reach out. And the community, the schools, they reach out and nominate moms. In terms of national, same thing. Some of the big oncology hospitals have heard about us, and they'll send us really awful stories and see if we can help. We reserve at least 85% of our funds for Arizona, but as we grow, we're going to continue to try and figure out how we can do other places, because what we hear is that we're offering a very niche support. We do help and support within 72 hours. We can pay a mortgage so that mom can take a deep breath for 30 days. Like you said earlier, Heather, it's an acute situation. It's not a chronic. If someone has been completely thrown off their game, someone nominates them, it's like an answer to a prayer. A mom's been crying, and we come in and we'll say, listen, we're going to pay your mortgage for a month. We're going to give you meals for 30 days. And if there's other kids at home while you're visiting one child in the hospital, we have volunteers that will help drive them back and forth. So the mission is to try and take the burden away for 30 days on mom, who seems to be the one that's holding it together, right? So that's what we do. I can tell you that we probably get, in terms of applications, I don't know, somewhere 3 a week. I got 2 yesterday, both moms. One young mom, 30 years old, just diagnosed with a grade 4 glioblastoma and has 6 months to live, and they wanted a trip to California with her kids. The other mom that was nominated yesterday has 2 young daughters, 2 years old and 6 months old, and they have a rare genetic disease that will take their life within a year. And mom's 30 years old and a researcher, and she has to quit her job and stay with these girls because there's no caretakers for, think of Parkinson's for a two-year-old. It's just a degenerative disease. The three-month-old is not symptomatic yet, so they can take her to Italy and try and do this trial. But for two working people that are young parents, how do they navigate that? So we're able to come in for a month and pay their expenses. But this is what I see every day, and that's what we try to do. We try to assess these quickly, bring support quickly, so that mom can have that 30 days. The other thing we do is mentor moms that have been through something that want to get back out there and start their own situation, 501c3. But anything where we can come in and bring grace to a situation for mom or her family or a motherless situation, that's what we try to do.
Michelle, where can our listeners get a hold of you if they want to help or get involved? And also, I'm personally looking forward to reading your book and the stories of the moms that have inspired you. So how would they get a hold of you and also get the book? Because by the time this podcast comes out, it will have come out. So they'll be able to.
You can find Mother's Grace on Facebook. We post a lot. And then we have our own website, which is mothers-grace.org. And it has all the contact information on there. It has my email, phone number, everything. And then the book comes out next Tuesday on Amazon. So it's already on there. There are people already pre-ordering it. But there's really cool stories of 12 different women that have been through some really heartbreaking stuff that are doing some great things, just like you two, you know, doing great things.
No, well, I cannot wait to read the book, and I can't thank you enough just for all that you do. I mean, honestly, you are such an angel and a light, and it has been such a privilege talking with you today. And this question, I mean, because I feel like you are the epitome of bravery, but what does it mean to you to be brave?
I think a lot of people look at me and think I'm really brave and strong. That's the perception because of what I'm doing. But I have the same feelings as everybody else. I get scared and anxious. So it's feeling those feelings and asking for divine support and taking one step forward and getting up the next day and trying again. I mean, that's all we can do.
Beautifully said.
Love it.
Thank you so much, Michelle, for everything. And I know your book's going to be a big hit, so we can't wait to get it. Thank you. Uh-huh.
Thanks so much. Sure. Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And I'd like to ask you, if you did, if you could please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review and a 5-star rating, I hope. I really would like to get this podcast out to more women, supporting women, and I can't do it without your help. Thanks so much, and be brave.